Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The Shulman administration says it's met a key customer service deadline for the state's healthcare exchange, known as Vermont Health Connect. When it's fully functional, it will allow consumers to make changes to their healthcare applications using an online system. But it may take several months for this system to be completely operational. Given all of the problems that Vermont Health Connect has experienced over the past 18 months at a cost of almost $200 million, Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott says the time has come to have Vermont strongly consider closing down its exchange and join together with several other New England states.
I'm afraid of the future in terms of the maintenance costs and so forth, because if we have a one-of-a-kind system that we are going to be beholden to somebody else to fix and maintain, that could be cost us a great deal of money. Whereas with Connecticut, if we could go in with them in some capacity, those maintenance costs could be reduced substantially, in my opinion.
What's the future of Vermont Health Connect, and will it ever function the way it was originally designed? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Lawrence Miller, who is chief of healthcare reform for the Shumlin administration. Welcome back to Vermont Edition.
It's good to be with you.
So the governor set a deadline at the end of May for the so-called change in circumstance function to be working. Previously, when a person needed to update their application to reflect perhaps a change in employment, income, marriage, they would provide a Vermont Health Connect service representative with this information, and then that employee would enter this information into the system by hand because it couldn't be done electronically. It was a very time-consuming process. There's a backlog of more than 10,000 people waiting to change some of their information. So is the situation now that a customer still needs to call Vermont Health Connect to talk to a service representative, but that employee will be able to electronically enter this information into the system? Is this up and operating now?
Yeah, let me go into a little more detail about what used to be the approach. So somebody would call in or send in a mailed form, and one of the customer service representatives would open a service request, and that would go into a queue because the interim change process, the manual workaround, was so complex that you couldn't do that while you had a customer on the phone. And there's actually a small subset of employees who were trained at that skill level to do that process without errors. And it wasn't just the state that was involved. It's manually updating the database layer at the state, then manually developing a form to go to the premium processor, manually developing forms, electronic forms, to go to Medicaid, Blue Cross, MVP, and Delta. Now the situation that we've got is that customer service representative can enter the change information in the portal sort of in a familiar web-type interface instead of in a database layer that has thousands of fields. That portal then updates all of those fields automatically in the database. That night, a form is automatically generated and sent to the premium processor, off to BGS so that they can print notices to mail to people, and off to the carriers to let them know what those changes are for their members. So it has taken a process that involved up to 120 hours of somebody's staff time entering things and taking that down to, 5 minutes in the case of a change of information like address, about 10 minutes in the case of doing something that's got to say a full eligibility determination or a major change. And we're still going through the process of validating that. We did testing, but now it's a question of working through validation and making sure that's working in the live environment. It's going very well.
It took 120 hours to process.
Up to 120 minutes. But these things were all going into a queue. So we have 129 changes a day coming in, typically, on average. And our ability to process them was only about 300 a day. But that was the same system we were using to resolve renewals where there was a change in somebody's income as well. So there was quite a large workload through the open enrollment process. So we had brought the backlog down to zero, but that climbed through open enrollment back to about 10,000. So now if we can move to being able to resolve hundreds of changes a day, even with 120 some odd coming in a day, you know, we expect to be able to resolve all of that over the next couple of months. It's very important that we finish that work before turning on the automated change process for self-service by individuals, because if they entered a change on the website when there's a pending service request, that would create another error and put people in a worse situation than they're in now, and that's what we want to avoid. So that's why we're delaying turning on that self-service function.
So would it be fair to say at this point this function is still in the testing phase?
No, it's past testing phase. We've done the testing work. This is what's more characterized as validation, because there's differences between the testing system and the real system. The database is much larger. The test cases that were used in the test case were developed using the new version of the software, whereas the changes are being applied to cases that were created using the old version of the software. So you always go through this process with a major new release of doing a series of changes. We're working with real cases and then monitoring each of those all the way through the process to make sure that they're all working correctly. And then you ramp up. So we did a few the first day, tens the next day, yesterday, well over 100, and last night's batch didn't have any errors. So, you know, we know we're moving towards the right place. Then, once we're satisfied on our end, we're beginning to send small sets of sample cases to the carriers so that they can validate on their end. There are a couple of more complex transactions that we're going to keep working in test to make sure that we've taken advantage of these new cycles. But we're beginning to implement production of basic change of information. We're transmitting all files back and forth to Medicaid. So we're moving into a position that's actually feeling pretty good. Yesterday, they did over 100 cases with about 10 people who were in a training mode and in a verification mode. So that's telling us that they're going to be able to get the volumes way, way, way beyond what we were able to accomplish before this update.
But at this time right now, you can't say that this information is being accurately transmitted to the insurance carriers?
It is being accurately transmitted. Then they also have to go through the process of making sure it's accurately being consumed. Each of those carriers also had to do updates on their end. So that's part of the validation process. And our testing process did work through end-to-end testing so that was proven to work through the carrier level before we went live. Now it's a question of making whatever configuration adjustments might be needed to make sure everything is consumed properly. And again, it's just out of an abundance of caution. We've frustrated people more than enough and want to make sure that as we take these next steps, we don't make new mistakes.
Today in the program, our guest is Lawrence Miller, who is Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration. We're looking at the operations of Vermont Health Connect. You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What are your thoughts about Vermont Health Connect? Does it make sense to try to fix some of these existing problems so the exchange can work the way it was designed to? Or should Vermont look to Connecticut, perhaps, to join up to offer healthcare policies in the future? Maybe you have some direct experience dealing with Vermont Health Connect. Tell us about it. Some people have had tough times. Other people have had relatively easy experiences. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-639-2211. Let's start off with John, who's calling from Richmond. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'll make it quick. I used to work in customer support for a software vendor. Now, I'm not a programmer, but I dealt with the end users. And the process that Mr. Miller has been describing is something that usually is done in product development. You don't release something that isn't able to produce the functions as it is, quote-unquote, designed until it can actually do it. And the process that he's describing now is something that would be done before it ever saw the light of day. So my question is, why should we trust that this is going to be any different? We're still doing it in the real world, so to speak. And all that beta testing and the ultimate folks holding the bag are the customers. There seems to be no consequence to the ultimate the previous vendors. We're not getting rebates or refunds or anything like that, or at least I'm not aware of it. There's so many questions that beg the question, why should we try this again? And I'd like Mr. Miller to address that.
Sure. Well, first of all, we did do all of the end-to-end testing in the test environment. There is no substitute for ultimately going live and ensuring that you do a validation program as soon as you do go live. And we've got a lot of issues in the system. People are aware of that. I am not going to make any assumptions that just because our testing program was sound, that we should just turn the faucet on full bore. I think prudence is issued and is required, and what I'm seeing is that prudent approach being followed and taken care of. Contract with the previous vendor was concluded under a termination agreement. The penalties that were in that original contract were fully realized to the benefit of the state, and the work that was in process is being completed by the replacement vendor to our level of satisfaction. They've done a lot to complete that. The amount that we're spending is within the federal grants that were allocated to us. The total budget of $200 million, we are still expected to come in below that and not have any cost to the state other than that small match in some cases. But it's within it's to establish parameters. So the original launch of Vermont Health Connect was tied to a federal date and requirement. And I think in any normal commercial circumstance, you would not have launched Vermont Health Connect without a functioning change of circumstance capacity. But that's not what happened in collaboration with CMS. And I, been sent up there thereafter to work on it ever since.
Do you fully appreciate how frustrated some people have been with this system? And I mean, messing with people's healthcare is, it's hard to think of something that's more important to folks than their healthcare.
I do, Bob. My personal cell number and my email are posted on the online employee directory for the state of Vermont. So people call me directly, regularly, stop me in the grocery store. So I have a lot of direct customer service experience with people who are frustrated, and I've got a reasonable amount of customer service experience with people who are happy with the coverage they've gotten as well, and the fact that they're able to afford coverage with the subsidies that are there.
You mentioned October. That's a renewal time, another big deadline for the administration. How confident are you that things are going to be working for folks at the renewal period?
I think what this release is telling me is that the turnaround of the trouble project has been successful. We're going to continue to be probably more careful than you would be with a project that had not had this experience. By October 1st, a month before open enrollment starts, we've set the deadline to have automated renewal process in place. We've got the benchmark of having the backlog cleared and meeting normal customer service standards. Those are that if somebody submits a change in the first half of the month, it's effective on the following bill. And if they submit a change in the second half of the month, it's reflected on one of the following two bills.
Because that's important in November, because you're going to have a lot of people renewing who have change of circumstance in their lives that need to be reflected in their policies.
That's right. And it's not just the 35,000 people who have qualified health plans. We're also managing Medicaid eligibility enrollment through this field as well. And so that's 165,000 Vermonters that the exchange also serves.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Baloo, who's calling from Marshfield. Hi, Baloo.
Hello, good morning. Good morning. This is Baloo. Two points. I manage a pediatric practice locally in Morrisville for the past some unknown years. There is tremendous frustration and anguish that people's policies are getting canceled left and right, Medicaid getting canceled left and right. We are serving socially a little bit handicapped people here, and they go through this anguish, and our office is also, our collection has gone down. We are almost going to be shut down. That is the real problem. My background is also IT. I'm an open source advocate. Any IT system, the architecture, the logic of the program should be open. Only the data and the database is private. So all these testing going on, these testing logic should be open source for people that people like me can address and find out how much confidence I have. These bureaucrats can come and keep on lying through their teeth. I do not have any faith in the system. Last day of May was the last day. Still we are in the testing phase. The rubber hasn't hit the road yet. So we are going to be in for another disaster. I can guarantee you that. Thank you.
I do want to clarify, we're past the testing phase and in implementation. We are processing actual changes of circumstance for individuals in the system, and we are doing that slowly on purpose because we do not want people to suffer mistakes from that implementation. The thing that this is supposed to accomplish in terms of improving customer service will get to exactly the types of problems that the caller is referencing with people having cancellations. Need to be able to, when it takes 100 and some odd minutes to do something so basic as update somebody's address, you can imagine that there's been a backlog of updating people's addresses. They have to get a bill in the mail at the right address to be able to pay their premium on time to the right place. So it's these really fundamental impacts from the work that had not been completed previously that are leading to these issues. It's been very hard for the provider community, as you heard, as well as the citizens.
Today in the program, we're looking at the operations of Vermont Health Connect. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Lawrence Miller, who is Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration. We're looking at the operations of Vermont Health Connect. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Scott in Winooski. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I'm actually calling because I personally have had one of the worst experiences possible with Vermont Health Connect. I won't go into the details of it, but suffice to say, between October and January, I recorded every customer service call that I had with Vermont Health Connect because the absolute confusion on behalf of the exchange was a nightmare for me. Since the discussion about the potential working with Connecticut to roll out an alternative to the Vermont Health Connect website, I haven't heard anyone from the Shumlin administration talk about what the benefit is of seeing this project through, even though we have missed the deadlines that were laid down. You know, there's been a lot of backpedaling away from those deadlines and talking about completing implementation. I just don't understand what the benefit is of trying to complete work that has been difficult and has missed deadlines, whereas there is an alternative option out there, a software that already exists and is working at a high level of functionality and successfully for another state, a larger state, I might add.
Well, and Scott, we should mention that Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott and several key lawmakers have met with officials from Connecticut to discuss the possibility of having Vermont use the structure of the Connecticut Exchange in the future. Here's what Phil Scott said.
they are so confident that this could be helpful to us in Vermont and came up and gave us a demonstration and actually showed us how autonomous and how unique this could look and appear. It would be our own system with our own plans. It was just utilize their structure based cloud-based without having to invest in all the infrastructure here in Vermont.
So there are a bunch of people who think that joining with Connecticut would be a great idea. Why isn't the state pursuing that?
So we're looking at other alternatives. Obviously, we have an obligation to do that and have looked at what alternatives we have at every step. Connecticut has recently gone out to offer this to other states. I think it's important to observe that, you know, changing the look and feel of the front end of a website is very different from completing a full back end transition, getting everybody over into a different system. There is no capacity in that system to provide for Vermont premium assistance or cost sharing reductions, which has been a very important part of Vermont meeting its uninsurance rate levels and keeping insurance affordable and effective for Vermonters.
Couldn't you accomplish that through tax credits of some kind?
You could, but you'd have to design a whole other program. Now, when you're talking about saying, okay, we're going to save a bunch of money, but we're going to have to go build or finish Vermont Health Connect anyway, that becomes a problem. They don't provide all of the service to Medicaid that Vermont Health Connect is designed to provide to ours. They're not interfacing electronically with the Connecticut Medicaid office. So they are still working on completing their project. This project is not just Vermont Health Connect. I think that's what's important to remember, that years ago at the under the previous administration, they determined that the best path forward, together in consultation with CMS, for replacing the old access system at the Agency of Human Services would be to transition to an Oracle stack, a shared enterprise system, so that all programs at AHS could have a shared system to serve Vermonters, so that when you're interacting with the agency, you would have one identity, one point of contact, one eligibility system, one service foundation. And CMS provided significant federal funding through the exchange grants as well as through other advanced planning document agreements for the Agency of Human Services to realize this. We are under contract with them. It is their money. This is the path that they have agreed to. So it's not so easy as just picking up and moving to a different solution. We would still need to finish Vermont Health Connect for Medicaid. We would still be on a path to complete the rest of the exchange, and we would be paying for redundant costs for a separate system just for Vermont Health Connect for qualified health plans. And that, on an integrated basis, when I look out to future costs in fiscal 17, fiscal 18, it really looks substantially more expensive to have multiple systems compared to one integrated system. It's also important to realize you can't just go pick up and move without an appropriate process with CMS, appropriate procurement process. This is not something that could be effective, either a change to the federal system or a change to Connecticut or a change to another system, without going through the procurement process and without going through contracting, without having a decent transition plan. So this would be something that's effective for next year's open enrollment, not this year's open enrollment, if we do move.
You know, in hearing you talk about it, it almost sounds like you're saying, well, we've got Vermont Health Connect because of the IT upgrade to Human Services Agency programs, and that was a very important thing to do because the old computer systems were decades old. And at the same time, since we have that, we're kind of stuck with using this system for healthcare programs under the Affordable Care Act. So why not separate the two of them apart?
No, I'm not saying we're stuck with it. I'm saying that when I look at the menu of choices, that overall, the most rational choice is to complete the work in process. People are under the impression that this is something that's broken. It's not something that's broken. It's something that was incomplete. It was not possible to build a system like this in the time frame that was set out. And you see that represented in the failures across the country of these IT projects. And many of them were much more substantial failures than Vermont experienced. Integrating our Medicaid eligibility with our qualified health plan eligibility for individuals has been terrific. Do we need to do that for SHOP? Absolutely not. There's no subsidies. There's no crossover. We don't anticipate building out SHOP with the Vermont Health Connect development. That would be silly. That truly would be silly. There are functioning SHOPs out there, and we'll go shopping when we finish stabilizing for SHOP, when we finish stabilizing the individual market. But I've looked at multiple different transition paths in detail, talk to people who have been through those transitions in other states. It's pretty ugly.
There are probably a lot of people who might disagree with your assessment that this system wasn't broken.
I would say that the business processes were very challenging. But when we've had the independent review come in and say, okay, fundamentally on the architecture, you know, is there anything broken? No. The independent folks who've come in, whether it's Gartner or others, have said, yes, the strategy of using a simple industry standard Oracle stack is good. The problems with having a portal and interface that is not complete were substantial. And when we walked away from CGI last year, I did tell the legislature and people that it would be a year before we would see automated change of circumstance. It's a massive transition, and it's very unfortunate. We're left with no good options. We'll keep looking at those options. I mean, I've had conversations with Connecticut. I've had conversations with other solutions. We're not blind to the fact that there are significant operational problems today with Vermont Health Connect. I'm well aware of those.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Logan in Burlington. Hi, Logan. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I wanted to get in touch and just give you guys a compliment. I'm a young Vermonter, a recent graduate of UVM, living in Burlington, and found the Vermont Health Connect to be very user-friendly. All the customer service was great, and I thought you just needed a little confidence boost because I had nothing but a good experience registering for with Vermont Health Connect.
Thank you very much.
Let's turn to Carrie, who's calling from Dorset. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you today?
Great, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got two pieces to my question. One of them is just to qualify. I'm a small business owner in the state of Vermont. I own a couple of small retail stores and have for 15 years. And the first thing that I think about when Larry says that the system isn't broken, I look at it as if any small business ever opened its doors and provided the level of service that they did, they wouldn't be open anymore. It was so unfair to subject us all to that. I'm glad that the young man from Burlington had a great experience, but a previous caller, Scott, and I have more in common. I think I was one of the test cases because it was so radically wrong. The piece that I want to get across is that as a small business owner, we're still not talking about the funding for this program. And so it becomes that for me as a small business owner, I'm unable to provide no, that's not true. It makes more sense for me financially not to provide my employees with insurance. It makes more sense for me to deny covering them and having them go into the marketplace. They get a better plan for less money than I could if I paid for it, which is ridiculous. And then I wound up with a plan that is substantially more expensive and about half as good as what I used to have.
And at the same time, Lawrence, Vermont Health Connect has really never worked for small businesses. The idea was if you had 30 or 40 employees that you could go to – your employees could go to Vermont Health Connect and one might pick the platinum plan and somebody else would pick bronze, and it was going to offer great choices to employees of these businesses. But the fact of the matter is this has never worked. And small businesses go directly to the carriers now.
Yeah, and actually small businesses going directly to the carriers is working very well. Both carriers are happy to offer their plans to all employers. Employees can have full choice through that direct enrollment option. That's working really well. None of the shops around the country are finding very good take rates. None very good experiences. We haven't even begun developing a shop or looking to purchase a shop. Partly because of that, we aren't seeing a huge benefit of shop around the country. So we've deprioritized that to since small businesses are able to enroll directly and offer choice with the carrier's participation. So that's been something that there's no reason to mess with for now. You know, the caller talks about the plan selection and the availability, and I think it's important to recognize that we are implementing the Affordable Care Act, the federal requirements, and it's the federal mechanisms around the individual subsidies that set up the situation that the caller is referencing, where it's cheaper for her employees to go direct to an exchange and get a subsidy from the feds than it is for her to offer employer and sponsored insurance. And that I think that's going to continue to be a national debate. It's going to continue to see a dynamic around, hey, what's the employer assessment going to look like from the feds? And how does that balance with the subsidy? And if employers are in retail, you're typically not as high a wage base as other say manufacturing companies or IT companies, and there's this constant balancing going on between, hey, what are we going to see as the employer assessments go up and those fines go up from the feds, and what are we going to see with subsidies, and how does that affect business decisions?
Now, am I correct that starting on January 1st, it'll be businesses with fewer than 100 employees that will need to purchase these qualified healthcare plans? And are you at all concerned that now that you're getting into larger corporations, that some businesses might say, the heck with this, we're going to self-insure?
So the moving the threshold to 100 employees is part of the federal law, and it means that employers with fewer than 100 employees and individuals will be in one risk pool. So that's good because you're expanding the size of that risk pool. And so that'll help stabilize pricing and improves predictability from an actuarial perspective. It won't change how they have to buy. You know, they'll continue to go direct to the carriers. We are also going to be looking at a merged market study because the feds will allow large employers above 100 to buy on the exchange or provide that a state can allow that. But that would further compress the market. Everybody would be in that risk pool. And we want to really understand what the actuarial implications of that are. It affects public employees. It affects the retirement fund. So it has a direct impact on state finances as well. It's not just private employers. It's the state as an employer that could see a major impact of that. So we're working on understanding that.
Because if some businesses decide to self-insure, then their rates will be based on the experience of their own company. And if you take some healthy people and healthy corporations out of the pool, aren't you left with perhaps a riskier pool?
You can be. But many of these companies have the same demographic profile that the state does. So that would not necessarily be particularly attractive. And for firms smaller than 100, going on to a self-insured basis, even with reinsurance, can be a more expensive approach because of the administrative costs for such a small pool and then the volatility that's associated with such a small number of people in a risk pool is also a significant concern.
Today on the program, our guest is Lawrence Miller, Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Lawrence Miller, Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We've been looking at the operations of Vermont Health Connect. In a couple of weeks, one of these Mondays, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to make a very important decision of whether or not subsidies, federal subsidies, can be used at states that use federal exchanges. How big a ruling is this going to be for states and for the state of Vermont?
Well, for the state of Vermont, it won't have much of an impact. It doesn't affect states that have established their own exchanges. Vermonters would continue to be eligible for federal subsidies. For those states that have used the federal technology, there is substantial exposure for citizens of those states who have purchased on the exchange. The decision is about whether or not those folks were ever eligible for federal subsidies. And it's entirely unclear whether or not Congress would act to provide retroactive coverage for those folks of subsidy coverage or act at all to address it in the future. It's obviously the Affordable Care Act has been a very divisive piece of legislation in D.C., and it's not particularly clear to me what this Congress would do.
We got this email from Conrad, who wrote us, given all of the problems that have given all the problems with the payment system, why is the state acting as a go-between for insurance carriers and subscribers and paying another vendor to administer it? I have yet to hear anyone from Vermont Health Connect address the question of why they set up this cumbersome and unnecessary step in the payment system.
Sure. The as best as I understand it, there were a couple of things that drove that decision. One was the fact that with mixed households, Medicaid, which includes Dr. Dinosaur, as well as commercial insurance, that would provide a way for people to make a payment to one place. We're also managing multiple payment streams. The carriers are able to get the advanced premium tax credit directly from the feds, but we have to blend Vermont premium assistance with the citizens' payment to then forward to carriers. So it was partly that complication of how do you integrate those different payment flows to get to all of the carriers appropriately, so that people make one payment for their combination of medical, dental, and any Medicaid premium, if it's a premium-based program, to one spot. The Vermont subsidy is joined with that, and then that those funds are distributed. So the idea is that would relieve burden on individuals. The premium processing side of things is working fairly well once the correct information is at the premium processor. The premium processor is they do this for the insurance industry. They handle MVPs billing in the real world, right? So MVP customers would still have Benaissance be their premium processor if it was being done directly. It's this lack of the change functionality that's been such a fundamental problem that has led to a mismatch between the correct information being in the Vermont Health Connect system for what somebody wants and them being in the Benaissance system and them being in the carrier system. So the fact that this flow will now be automated instead of manual and be timely instead of months behind should clarify all of that. There's another couple of payment policies that we need to revisit. We want to make sure that retroactive changes are effective with the next bill, not retroactively, and that change is being made right now. And we also don't have a sense-off rule, which is kind of silly. If you miss your payment by a penny, it doesn't go to the carriers, and we're addressing that as well.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Gwyneth in Norwich. Hi, Gwyneth. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you? I received a fine this week from the IRS for failure to insure a household member. And this is because Vermont Health Connect failed to communicate to the health insurance company that payments were being made. And therefore, my husband was dropped in error. And then we weren't able to get him back insured for about 3 to 4 months. We tried very hard. I'm sure a lot of Vermonters will be receiving this fine, or they've already received it in error. And I'm just wondering, after everything they've been through, are there plans for the state to address it, to waive it, due to all the issues in 2014? Thank you.
So certainly, if your husband was eligible for retroactive reinstatement, that should have been done. And my email is lawrence.miller@state.vt.us, and I'd be happy to follow up with that. There is not a plan in place for the state to take on the IRS liability in these cases, or in cases where income determination may have been made differently. That would be a substantial unknown, and that hasn't been considered at this point.
Let's talk to Susan in Moortown. Hi, Susan. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Actually, it's Susan in Moortown. And I want to say first, I'm a Democrat, and I am just disgusted with the way the Shumlin administration has dealt with Vermont Health Connect. My first question for Mr. Miller is, how much money did the state pay CGI, and exactly how much money did we get back for their failed website? Two, I'd like to know why the administration feels okay paying hundreds of dollars to consultants who don't do work and then going about and laying off state workers. And three, I just have to say, from everything you said, it doesn't sound like you've met the deadline for the change in circumstance. It's not met. So thanks. I'll take my answer off the air.
I don't have the specific dollar amount for CGI with me today. At the termination of the contract, all of the liquidated damages were assessed and retained. There was no refund against those liquidated damages because we never paid them in the first place. We deducted that from what we paid them. And they did meet the performance requirements of the transition agreement and the closeout. So that, I think, was fairly clearly handled. I'm not sure I know the reference to paying contractors who aren't doing any work. All of the contract submittals are reviewed against what work was under contract, and if work isn't done, it isn't approved for payment.
Let's talk to Lyle, who is calling from Belvedere. Hi, Lyle. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Welcome. I'm glad to be here. Hey, I just have a big question. Vermont Health Connect was touted as being the program to reduce premiums, and now we have Blue Cross Blue Shield, I think, asking for a 10% increase in their premium, and MVP asking for 3 or 5% increase. I just asked, what's the deal with that?
So
Blue Cross, like an answer if we can find one.
Sure, Blue Cross Blue Shield has submitted a request to the Green Mountain Care Board for an 8.4% increase. We would expect the process that the Green Mountain Care Board goes through to bring that down. MVP came in with a 3% increase. It's more consistent with the 3.5% increase we see in hospital budgets. It's important to remember that hospital costs and medical costs are not the only driver. As long as we fail to fund Medicaid and the feds fund Medicare below cost, there are additional costs that are shifted onto commercial premiums and individual premiums. And we're going to continue to see that reflected in a higher increase rate for commercial premiums than the underlying medical expense until we do address it as a state.
We've got about a minute left. The governor tried to address that this year. He had his 0.7% payroll tax and wanted to really drastically raise the reimbursement rates for Medicaid. Lawmakers didn't go along with that idea. Will we see another plan next January?
You know, as I said, it's going to continue to affect commercial premiums until we address it. I don't know what approach might be recommended next year, but I don't think it's something that we're going to turn away from.
Well, there are a lot of issues we're going to be following in the weeks and months ahead. Healthcare Reform Chief Lawrence Miller, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for Vermont Edition today. On Monday, we'll explore the boundaries of social media. Many of us are online all the time, tweeting, posting, and more. But what should and you should not do on your Facebook page? Should you put complaints about your boss there, political arguments? And what do you tell your kids who are online younger than ever? Send your thoughts and questions to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and post them online, if you dare. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sungari, and Sam Gale Rosen. We have production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.